Rise to Offend, a podcast that explores people who rose to offend in society and their legacy today. I'm your host, Petr Spych, and this week, we tell the tale of Bill Hicks, the rock and roll comic who built a cult following in stand-up comedy by telling jokes more based in truth than satire. He presented a cynical worldview and a huge admiration for hallucinogenic drugs. Born December 16, 1961, in Valdosta, Georgia, by 7 years old, Bill and his family would relocate to Houston, Texas, where Bill always referred to as his home.
All my point is there's a lot of ways to look at the world. You know what I'm saying? Why pick the way you learn over TV? Because it's usually wrong. You ever see a good drug story on the news? Never. News is supposed to be objective, isn't it? Supposed to be the news. But every drug story is negative. Well, hold it. I've had some killer fucking times on drugs. Let's hear the whole story. Same LSD story every time, and we've all heard it. Young man on acid, thought he could fly, jumped out of a building. What a tragedy. What a dick. How about a positive LSD story? That would be newsworthy, don't you think? Anybody think that just once to hear a positive LSD story? Today, a young man on acid realized that all matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration, that we are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There is no such thing as death. Life is only a dream, and we are the imagination of ourselves. Here's Tom with the weather.
And this week, joining me, guys, is Brandon Guchon. Bill Hicks, he started doing stand-up comedy at a very young age. When he was 13 years old, he would want to emulate Woody Allen, and he would buy his records and watch movies like Casino Royale.
Yeah, there's dead fellas actually on the streets of New York. Bums. They call them homeless. They're bums. Okay. Very idea they want me to just give them the hard-earned money my folks send to me every week. You leech, get a job. My dad works 8 hours a day for this money. Maybe I was just raised differently.
Now, it inspired him at such a young age that when Bill was in school, he would interrupt constantly because he wanted to be the funny guy in class. Eventually, an English teacher would actually be like, you know what, Bill? I'm going to let you go up here in front of the class for the first 5 minutes of class, do your act, and then you have to sit down and not interrupt the class. So Bill would start practicing his routine at the age of 13 in front of his English class.
You know, I'm just so sick of this whole deal of we arm the world, we arm these little countries, and then we send troops over to blow the shit out of them, you know? We're like the bullies of the world right now. Do you know that? We're like Jack Palance in the movie Shane, throwing the pistol at the sheep herder's feet. Pick it up. I don't want to pick it up, mister. You'll shoot me. Pick up the gun. Look, mister, I don't want no trouble. I just came to town to get some Hard Rock candy for my kids and some gingham for my wife. I don't even know what gingham is, but she goes through about 4 or 5 rolls a week of that stuff. I don't want no trouble, mister. Pick up the gun. You all saw him. He had a gun.
Now, he would just kind of bite bits from the Woody Allen record, but he would always be practicing the routine at such a young age. He also grew up in a Southern Baptist community, and although he was never interested in religion, Bill studied the preacher. He watched how this guy commanded an audience. In a lot of ways, he emulated a preacher in his comedy as time went by.
I'm down in that town, Fife. After the show, I go to a Waffle House. I'm not proud of it. I'm hungry. I'm eating, I'm alone, and I'm reading a book. Waitress walks over to me. Hey, what you reading for? Is that like the weirdest question ever? I have never, ever been asked that. You know what I mean? What are you reading? Okay. But what are you reading for? Shit, you stumped me. Why do I read? Yeah. Guess I read for a lot of reasons, you know. And one of them is so I don't end up being a fucking waffle waitress, all right?
So practicing his skills from the age of 13 and 14, Bill wanted to do anything that he possibly could in stand-up comedy. So by 1976, at the age of 14, there was no comedy clubs in Houston at this time. So he would send out audition tapes. One of the first things he got booked on was Jerry Lewis had a telethon, and he got a 45-minute time slot to do stand-up comedy from 2 a.m. to 2:45 a.m., and that is at the age of 14.
A lot of comics have come out of Texas, and they're really good, and they really have idiosyncratic voices with something to say, and I think there's no difference between music, good music and good comedy. It's just, it's entertainment, you know?
Yeah, definitely entertainment.
And entertainment is suspension of time and space so that you realize your true nature, which is spaceless and timeless.
How often do people know their dreams and attack it with this veracity at the age of 13 and 14?
Knowing who you are at age 13 or 14, that's, how many people do you know like that, that have any semblance of self at that age?
I know none. I feel at 13 and 14 like you chasing all these basic functions, but his focus was almost like spot on to performing in comedy. You know, how important was that to, you think, his personality and his growth?
Well, I definitely think that he noticed a couple of things. Number one, obviously, the Woody Allen movies and the stand-up routine was the first thing that really shook him. You know, definitely he related to that, wanted to be that. But then again, you know, the Southern Baptist preaching, I mean, if it's anything like I think it is, and again, I'm not necessarily a super religious man, but there's a lot of energy that goes into that preaching. And I'm sure that Bill, when he saw that and he saw the people react to, you know, certain words, certain hand gestures, these are all the things that he ended up just becoming a part of him and a part of his performance well into his career. Like, and they always stayed with him.
Yeah, and at no point did he want to be a preacher or believed in the message. He just loved the command.
You think the world's 12,000 years old? That's right. Okay, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
It's a one-word question.
Fine.
Dinosaur. I mean, if the world's 12,000 years old and the Bible covers it, why didn't someone bring up fucking dinosaurs? You think someone would have brought that up somewhere in the goddamn book. And Jesus and the disciples walked down the path towards Nazareth. But oh, the trail was blocked by a giant brontosaurus with a splinter in his paw. And the disciples did run a screaming, what a big fucking lizard lord. I'm sure gonna mention this in my book, said Luke. Well, I'm sure gonna mention it in my book, said Matthew. I'm not sure what I saw, said Thomas. Timothy nudged him. It was a big fucking lizard, Thomas. But Jesus was unafraid, and he took the splinter from the brontosaurus paw, and the brontosaurus became his friend.
So by 1978, there was finally a comedy workshop that opened up in Houston, and it was called the Comedy Workshop. Now that there was a comedy club and they were underage, because at this point he's only about 16 years old, he would go to the club owner and he would tell him, hey, I've got all this experience. I've been on the Jerry Lewis telethon. Here's my resume. And he would sell himself. And the comedy owner at the time would be like, all right, we'll give you some time, because there wasn't a scene in Houston, Texas. And the owner was so impressed with his sharpness, and a key word that always comes back to Bill Hicks, his confidence when he came on that stage, how much he demanded it. So he would give Bill time at 16 years old.
Well, I started off, I actually went on stage at a church talent show at church camp when I was 13 years old and did Richard Pryor material. Yeah, I was demon-possessed in their eyes. But I started off then, and then I was interested in comedy real early on, and this is like 1977, I guess, 76. And then the club started
popping up all over the country. Because I remember watching as a kid, watching comics on Carson, and that's when he started having them on like every week and then every night.
Why did they start popping up all over the country?
Well, I think it's because my own opinion is comedy is the last bastion of free speech. You get to see on stage at a comedy club someone calling a spade, not any network censorship. You know, and this is when it's good. I'm not saying it's all like that by any stretch of the imagination. You get your share of hacks, of course. In any booming business, you're going to get the leeches and bootlickers, you know. But for me, it is something you go to see where you see you can't see anywhere else. Not even when you see a comic on television can you see him really do his stuff. You don't ever see Richard Pryor on network TV doing his stand-up act. Now, if you come into a club, you can see a guy, no holds barred, doing anything, you know, and a lot of people abuse that and they do old dirty jokes or the people come to see dirty jokes. I don't really believe that, but when it's good, you get to see people, freedom of speech, different ideas, different opinions, and done humorously.
This would see Bill every Tuesdays going forward, going to a club that's 21 and over, performing and doing comedy routines. Now, his routines at the time were all very clean. They're about his family, but the topic in his routine was, you know, in essence, write what you know. And he would always tell the truth. And for some reason, he learned at a very young age, his truth, people not only related to, but they found it hilarious because it was real life. This is something comedians didn't do back then. Comedians had personas. They had acts. Even like Woody Allen, he had an act. Even like Richard Pryor coming up at the time, who was influencing Bill Hicks, had an act.
The common perception is that most comics are screwed up. Have you found that to be true?
No, I don't believe
personally.
That. That's a myth. I think the world
really
is...
really troubled background.
Well, yeah, but who didn't? Humor. Who didn't have a troubled background? You know, anybody who didn't is a fucking liar. Excuse me, I can't say that on TV, but I did. A liar. I'll say it again. No, I used to think that. I did. I thought because the Woody Allen, I'm so depressed. I had, you know, but it occurred to me finally that actually the world is very screwed up and people need comedians to set it right, you know. It's kind of like I heard a good description of humor. It reframes reality in a positive light. So I think comics are really kind of doorways to a different understanding of a very, very mixed up and very depressing world.
One comic that would change his outlook on everything, and that was Sam Kinison. Sam Kinison came through, and Bill saw Kinison's act, and Sam Kinison jumped off stage, and he put red panties around Bill's head, and this rock and roll persona of a comedian with all the music coming out, the Kiss records and Jimi Hendrix and all this stuff, this changed Bill's view of what a comedian is. So in a lot of ways, he had the intelligence and confidence of a Woody Allen, but he also had that rock and roll style of Sam Kinison, both infecting him.
Speaking of Satan, I was watching Rush Limbaugh the other day. Doesn't Rush Limbaugh remind you of one of those gay guys who likes to lay in a tub while other men pee on him? Am I the only one? Can't you see his fat body in a tub while Reagan, Quayle, and Bush just stand around pissing on him, and he can't, his little piggly wiggly dick can't get hard. I can't get hard. Reagan, pee in my mouth. Well, how's that, Rush? Still can't get hard, so they call in Barbara Bush. She takes her pearls off, puts them up his ass, then squats over him, undoes her girdle. She squeezes out a link into his mouth. Finally, his dick gets half hard. A little clear bubble forms on the end with a maggot inside. The maggot pops the bubble and runs off and joins a pro-life group somewhere. Am I the only one that sees that, or I'm not? Thank God I'm not alone.
So that persona to infect Bill at 16, was it a positive thing, or was he too young to really understand the reality of that?
I definitely think he was a little young. I wouldn't say too young, but he was definitely young. I mean, anytime you learn one of those super lessons that stick with you forever, you have to be at a certain age to really understand what's going on. Right now, he's seeing Sam Kinison go through Houston, the panties on the head. He's watching all the benefits of being the rock star, benefits of being the rebel. You know, so he's seeing exactly what that power, the same power he learned from the preacher. By the way, Kinison, former preacher, the same power he learned from the preacher, he saw in Kinison doing exactly what he wanted to do. And the topics that Kinison was talking about in the 70s, that was just getting touched on. And now just imagine being 16 years old, those topics weren't being discussed they were being touched on in movies, touched on in music, but you didn't hear stand-up comedy going that hard at that time. And here he is seeing this for the first time at 16 years old. His mind must have been completely blown.
It's a great sense of freedom. I feel very honest on stage when I don't really feel honest in other parts. I guess that's a lot to do with control as well. I do have a talent at it, and that it always is fun to do what you have a talent at. You know, when you have a talent at something and you do it and it works, there's like, you know, they say, well, there's nothing like that feeling. That's what I feel. I feel alive when I do it. And it's addictive, you know. It's like racing cars, I guess, you know what I mean? Or hitting the home run, you just go, I'll go through a slump for 5 years to have that feeling again.
And now, keep in mind, like I said, he's only 16, turning 17 years old this time, but he's been doing this for 4 years in some sort of format, whether it's in front of his classmates, whether it's on a telethon, and all the time that he's doing at the Comedy Workshop. So everybody sees the talent in Bill at such a young age.
I guarantee you Satan's going to have no problems on this planet because all the women are going to go, what a cute butt. He's Satan. You don't know him like I do. He's the Prince of Darkness. I can change him. And I bet that's true. I wouldn't give Satan a snowball's chance in hell against a woman's ego, man. He'd rule the earth for a day. A week later, we'd see Satan out cutting the lawn. Hey, aren't you Satan? Shut up. Whoa, Mr. Prince of Darkness, you forgot the edge back. Shut up! See him at the supermarket buying tampons, aisle 3. Hey, aren't you Satan? Shut up! You're pussy whipped! You're not Prince of Darkness, you're pussy whipped of darkness. Quit it, I'm Satan. Ah, bullshit. You dropped your tampon, Satan.
So his parents were worried because he was so obsessed with the scene and learning this and really talking to himself to perfect his act at all times, that they actually took Bill at 17 to a shrink. And the funny story about this is that the shrink, when it was all said and done, all the conversation, he pulled Bill Hicks aside and he goes, hey, there's nothing wrong with you, but there might be something wrong with your parents.
Wow. Right? If that's true, just imagine. I'm sure that's when the clean comic was dead. And then from that point on, it was like this emulation of Kinison.
The confidence that is going to be gained when a professional shrink says, no, dude, you're fine.
Yeah, you're smarter than the people that made you.
I just think it's interesting to see how people act on their beliefs, you know what I mean? Because your beliefs, they're just that. They're nothing. They're how you were taught and raised. That doesn't make them real. That's why I always recommend a psychedelic experience, because it does make you realize everything you learned is, in fact, just learned and not necessarily true. There's dick jokes on the way. Please relax.
In 1980, Bill did graduate high school, and at the same time, his parents were going to move them all to Little Rock, Arkansas. But Bill was like, you know what? I'm 19 years old. I just got graduated high school. Bill decides to instead just pack up a car and move to Los Angeles.
Because L.A. is a nightmare city, and the sooner it falls into the ocean due to a major earthquake and is flushed away like the turd city it is into the Pacific Bowl, the better this world will be. Thank you. Good evening. Yes, good evening. How are you tonight? Good. Thank you. The comedy of hate. Join me. It's the newest thing. Join me. Leaving nothing but a cool, beautiful serenity called Arizona Bay. That's right. When L.A. falls in the fucking ocean and is flushed away, all that will leave his Arizona bed.
So he moves to Los Angeles with no money in his pocket, and he just goes there directly to be a stand-up comic. So at 19, what kind of confidence do you need and how much belief in your craft to make that jump?
Well, I think after, keep in mind, he's 19, but he's been doing comedy now for how long?
6 years, but
five, 6 years.
But on a comedy, at a comedy club for about four.
Yeah, at a comedy club for about four. Now, he's, keep in mind, he's only been doing it once a week there at the comedy club. I'm sure there were other places he was doing comedy when they allowed it.
Mm-hmm.
So he definitely had the experience. And I'm sure when you're 19 years old and you go up there in Hollywood, I'm sure he raised a couple of eyebrows. I'm sure there were some pros going, look at this kid.
And this move, in a lot of ways, is like, hey, he's going to go to Arkansas. So he would lose whatever he had in Houston anyway. So him saying, if I'm going to move, I might as well move to Los Angeles and try this out. All that was very beneficial for him. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And on top of that, he's 19 years old. I mean, just imagine. You couldn't be told anything different at 19 years old. He has the conviction that is needed to be able to make it in a city like that.
I don't look outside myself for answers. I kind of feel like everyone has a voice of reason inside them, and I believe that's been quelled to a large degree by our multimedia society that we live in. But anything that defies my voice of reason comes out, and you hold it up to the light of reason. That's the premise. And then you start nailing it, and those are the jokes, until what's left is a laughter, I think, of recognition of a truth.
And Bill Hicks has not even tried alcohol at this point. He hasn't done drugs, nothing. You know, he is a smoker. That's the only thing that he's kind of done, the only vice he has. So he moves to L.A. to live by himself, and he quickly becomes a regular at the Comedy Store in L.A., where he shares a stage with a lot of comics that would eventually be famous. He befriended Jay Leno.
A lot of his idols, actually.
Yeah, a lot of them. So, like, Jay Leno, Andrew Dice Clay and him would perform together quite often. Gary Shandling, Jerry Seinfeld. So he would share time with all these guys, and he would bring something completely different because of where he was from, which was Houston.
Boy, I love talking about Kennedy assassination, man. That's my favorite topic. You know why?
Why?
Because to me, it's a great archetype example of how the totalitarian government who rules this planet partitions out information in such a way that we, the masses, are forced to base our conclusions on erroneous... Oh, I'm sorry, wrong meeting. I thought this was the meeting at the docks, no? Oh, shit, that's tomorrow night. All right. Everyone followed that. That's the frightening fucking thing. Everyone here is going, huh? God damn it. Are we that cynical? Yes, we are, Bill. We will take any blow you give us. Go! We too will be at the meeting at the docks tomorrow, you fucker.
Time is something we always talk about on this show with artists. How important was this move for Bill and the timing to see all these comics trying to make it at the same time, all these talented comics?
Well, speaking as a comic, you know, who has been doing this for quite a while, there is something to be said when you are a comedian who watches your idols on television, and then you go to LA and you go to the Comedy Store and you watch your idols working on new material. Now, all of a sudden, they're not idols anymore. They're not these golden gods. Now they're people. And then once you see that your idols are people, it either A, kills your motivation, or B, you go, I could be just as good as that. And now all of a sudden, and I think Bill went the latter. I think Bill's like, I could not only be just as good, I could be better than that. And he went harder than probably anybody at that time, just because he was younger, and I think he had a lot more to prove.
You never see my attitude in the press. That's what bugs me. You never see my point of view. For instance, gays in the military. Now, I don't know how y'all feel about it. Gays want to be in the military. Here's how I feel about it. All right? Anyone dumb enough to want to be in the military should be allowed in. End of fucking story. That should be the only requirement. I don't care how many push-ups you could do. Put on a helmet, go wait in that foxhole. We'll tell you when we need you to kill somebody. You know what I mean? I'm so sick. I've watched these fucking congressional hearings and all these military guys and all the pundits seriously. Oh, the esprit de corps will be affected, and we are such a moral... Excuse me, aren't y'all fucking hired killers? Shut up! You are thugs, and when we need you to go blow the fuck out of a nation of little brown people, we'll let you know. Until then... What did the fucking military get all these more? We are the military. Is that a village of children and kids? Where's the napalm? I don't want any gay people hanging around me while I'm killing kids.
When he was in L.A., he didn't like struggling, so he decided to, he called his friend out, and they decided to write a script. Now, all these guys that he knew in the comedy world, they're like, you know, we can probably pass your script on to someone here that can read it. So they spent all their time to write a script about what's going on and their growing up and a real honest story about their family and their life that they loved. So they actually got the script over to an agency and they had a meeting with this agent in L.A. So the agent told him he loved the script. This is something good. So at 19, Bill is on the verge of selling a Hollywood script. But the agent then says, you know what I want you to do, though? I want you to make these changes. And can we kind of rewrite this entire thing here? And all the notes was pretty much Bill had to write a new script. This discouraged him a lot because of the amount of time he put into his script. And he also had a bone to pick with any kind of authority or anybody telling him what's good or bad. That's something that would follow him his whole career. Just by that agent telling him to rewrite the script, Bill stayed at the Comedy Store for a little while, was a regular there, but then didn't like it anymore. So he decided not to rewrite the script, not to do anything, and to go back home. He had the mentality of like, hey, I'm good enough to create this same scene in my town of Houston, Texas.
By the way, if anyone here is in marketing or advertising, kill yourself. Thank you. Just planting seeds. Planting seeds is all I'm doing. No joke here, really. Seriously, kill yourself. You are no rationalization for what you do. You are Satan's little helpers. Kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself now. Now, back to the show. Seriously, I know the market people, they're going to be a joke coming up. There's no fucking joke. Suck a tailpipe, hang yourself, borrow a pistol from an NRA buddy, do something, rid the world of your evil fucking presence. Okay, back to the show. Planting seeds. They bear fruit? I don't know. Feel better plan. You know what bugs me though? I know everyone here who's in marketing is now thinking the same thing. Oh, cool. Bill's going for that anti-marketing dollar. That's a huge market. Quit it, quit it. Don't turn everything into a dollar sign, please. Ooh, the plea for sanity dollar. Huge, huge market. Look at our research.
What does that show you? Do you think he takes failure well, or he really believed he can start his own scene, his own comedy scene in Houston?
Well, you know what it's like to be a script writer, mm-hmm. and you know what it's like to have your baby get changed and change this and change that and change this, change that. Not only is it discouraging, it's maddening. And especially when you are Bill Hicks, you're this prodigy. All you've been told your entire life is, all you've been doing is just surprising yourself, surprising everybody that comes in contact with you, with your gift. Now, all of a sudden, some producer's going to go, oh, I really love what you did, but change it. And I'm sure, coming from Bill Hicks, he's like, I know better. I know better than you, douchebag. Who the hell are you to tell me what to do? And then you look at around, you look at LA and you're like, you know what? I'm tired of this lifestyle. Yeah, dude, he's got the confidence to go back to Houston and make that scene. And he did.
Yeah. No, he did. He did.
For a minute, that scene in Houston was huge.
It was. And he was a leader of that scene. Yeah.
It can be like anything, good or bad, depending on how you look at it. And I've looked at it both. I spent years hating it. I spent years drunk, partying. Oh, this is a nightmare. And then it occurred to me in a moment of lucid gratitude. I work an hour a night. I make tons of money. People love me. I get to go on stage and tell people what I think, and they listen, and not only listen, but laugh. I'm going to hate this. Then I would be definitely a desperately troubled person. It's a great life. Not that I want to travel the rest of my life. I'm young. I can do it now. I don't mind that. They pay me to go to cities I would never go on my own, you know, reconnaissance. And that's neat. But I don't want to do this the rest of my life traveling because I hate to travel. You know, I like being here. I like being where I get. I don't like the airports. There's nothing romantic about traveling. Case closed.
So returning to Houston, this is where Bill first started experimenting with drugs. And he was very much into hallucinogenic drugs, LSD, mushrooms, things like that. Now, he tried these before he even drank alcohol at any point. One thing that he always focused on was truth to him. He needed to express the truth. So when he started taking these drugs, he was exposing himself primarily now so his comedy, when he talked about this on stage, was going to be honest. So his experiences and his expectations were really just to put into a comedy act, right? But he got so much out of these things that he opened up his third eye, which he talks about constantly in his act, having your third eye open and being aware.
Drugs have done good things for us. That's my belief. Drugs have done good things for us. Hard to believe I'm saying this. Drugs have done good things for us. What do you mean, Bill? Well, if you don't believe drugs have done good things for us, do me a favor then. Go home tonight, take all your albums, your tapes, and your CDs, and burn them. Because you know what? The musicians who made that great music that has enhanced your lives throughout the years, real fucking high on drugs, okay? It's true. The Beatles were so high, they let Ringo sing a couple of tunes, man. Tell me they weren't partying. We all live in a yellow submarine. A yellow submarine. You know how fucking high they were? They had to pull Ringo off the ceiling with a rake to sing that fucking song. John, get Ringo. He's in the corner. Pull him down. Wow, look at him scoot. Grab him. Look at him scoot. But Ringo, come down. If Yoko's gone, we can party again. They were real high. They wrote great music. Drugs had a positive effect. They did. You cannot deny the fucking music. Can't deny it. Can't deny it.
By 1983, he's in Houston, Texas. There is a scene happening. Guys like Sam Kinison, Ron Schock, Jimmy Pineapple, Carl LeBeau, Fred Greenlee, Robert Barber. They were known as the Texas Outlaw Comics eventually, and Bill Hicks was a part of that scene and that movement, if you may. Now, by 1983, he was struggling with his art. He felt like it was going nowhere. He needed more edge. This is when he really got into drugs, and this is also when he first tried drinking. One day at the comedy club, he walked up to somebody at the bar and said, "Hey, guys, what's a drink that you should order if you never drank before?" And the person said, "Hey, order a margarita." So he goes to the bar. He's like, "Give me 7 of those." He drank them all and he went on stage. And then he performed. And that's when people started noticing the angry Bill Hicks.
They're all the same. I'll show you politics in America. Here it is right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control. Here's Love Connection. Watch this and get fat and stupid. By the way, keep drinking beer, you fucking morons.
The liquid courage was getting him to say things that he wouldn't have normally said, and it was working. People were really drawn to it. He would talk about abortion, atheism, all these topics that were kind of taboo or talked about in a joking manner. He would talk to them in a truthful, almost preaching-like manner, which made him, in that scene, more of a comics comic.
There's a term for comedy. It's called playing to the back of the room. And the back of the room is, that means you're not playing to the audience, you're playing to the comics. And there is a certain level of intrigue, you know, it's your best way to challenge yourself is to play to the back of the room, because the comics are the ones that have heard more comedy than any of the audience members. So they're the ones that are going to know about originality. They're going to be the ones that recognize you pushing the envelope. And that's probably what was going on. He probably was looking at it as a competition with those guys.
He wanted to impress Sam Kinison and those guys that would eventually be the Texas Outlaw Comics more than the audience. Because if you got their approval at 21, you feel like that would give him more confidence. Correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I have news for you. I live in the States, a very puritanical place, full of superstition and ancient religions that no longer serve their function on this planet because they're based on fear instead of love. But they say rock and roll is the devil's music. Well, let's say that it is. I got news for you. Let's say that rock and roll is the devil's music, and we know it for a fact to be absolutely, unequivocally true. Boy, at least he fucking jams. Okay, did you hear that correctly? If it's a choice between eternal hell and good tunes or eternal heaven and New Kids on the fucking Block, I'm going to be surfing on the Lake of Fire, rocking out. High-fiving Satan every time I pass him on the fucking shore. Because you know, if you play New Kids on the Block albums backwards, they sound better, yeah. Oh, come on, Bill, they're the New Kids. Don't pick on them, they're so good, they're so clean cut, and they're such a good image for the children. Fuck that. When did mediocrity and banality become a good image for your children? I want my children to listen to people who fucking rocked! I don't care if they died in puddles of their own vomit! I want someone who plays from his fucking heart!
He's 21, and like I said, he found his true voice with Liquid Courage helping him. What are the pros and what are the cons of that?
Well, the cons are, it's pretty obvious what the cons are. You get lost, you know, you fall in that downward spiral, and then all of a sudden you start thinking you need that to perform, and that's where a lot of people go wrong. Like, I know lots of people that just like one beer, two beer buzz. That's how I like to go up on stage. That's it. Well, there's some people out there, they go, I like a two-beer buzz. And then six beers into it, they forgot. You know, they lost count after two. So that's what happens when you rely on something like that. But the positive was we just talked about it. It gave him the liquid courage to push that envelope. And now he's starting to become the Bill Hicks that we know, that we all respect, that we all look up to.
So see, we just had a misunderstanding. I thought I lived in the U.S. of A., United States of America.
Right.
And actually we live in the U.S. of A., United States of Advertising. Freedom of expression is guaranteed if you've got the money. Mm. Okay.
At this point as well, he's 21 years old, 8 years he's been doing this and crafting it, and now he's finding a voice. He's growing with it. So the Woody Allen, Sam Kinison mix that he was before, that is now gone. He is finding his own voice, and it is leaning very much toward a cynical way. The preacher mentality still very strong in his act. So now, after refusing to go to LA, which a lot of people, LA and New York were the two major cities at the time for comedy.
Still are.
And still are to this day. And creating a scene in Houston, which was back in 1976, didn't even have a comedy club. Where is his confidence now in that level?
The fact that he basically took the scene from LA to Houston, mm-hmm. and he was the linchpin behind that.
Yeah.
And he's 21 years old, and he has his idol telling him how awesome he is. Yeah, I think he's doing pretty good at this point as far as like belief in himself. But again, that could be the beginning of the end sometimes for some people.
Doesn't every commercial blatantly use sex to sell the product? I believe most of them do. Here is the commercial they'd like to do, I guarantee you. We may see this one day yet, but this is the ultimate television commercial they want to do. Here's the woman's face, beautiful. Camera pulls back, naked breast. Camera pulls back, she's totally naked, legs apart, two fingers right here. And it just says, drink Coke.
Seeing all these guys be touring comics, Bill was ready to make that move. Now, the issue, though, is the alcohol and drug use became daily. And this was part of his life. He believed that the alcohol was part of his personality and what made him funny. A lot of his confidence was liquid courage. And this made his act not just angry, but as he's touring the States now in these small towns and he would play a gig anywhere, he would have heated verbal arguments with people on stage, which was not heard of back then. He would make it kind of an event where it could be uncomfortable, it could be hilarious, but he was almost educating. So he was learning that as touring.
People suck, and that's my contention. I can prove it on scratch paper and a pen. Give me a fucking Etch-A-Sketch. I'll do it in 3 minutes. The proof, the fact, the factorum. I'll show my work. Case closed. tired of this backslapping aren't humanity neat bullshit. We're a virus with shoes, okay? That's all we are. What do you say we lighten things up and talk about abortion? You know, I feel like I'm losing some of you here, and I want to win all of you back with this one. Let's talk about abortion. Let's talk about child killing and see if we can't get some chuckles rippling through the room here. Let's talk about mass murder of young, unborn children. See if we can't coalesce into one big, healthy gut laugh.
He comes back to Houston after touring for about 6 months and realizes that he's a little beat up and he doesn't feel like he's getting where he needs to get. Jay Leno comes through, his old friend from Los Angeles, and Jay Leno's like, hey, man, how about I try to get you on Letterman's show? You know, you have to be clean. You have to be less edgy. You got to do that stuff. And Hicks is well aware of that, and he's okay with that. So Jay Leno, just by reputation in the underground alone, gets Bill Hicks on David Letterman's show. And that's in 1984. So at the age of 22 years old, Bill Hicks now has 5 minutes on the late night show with David Letterman. And now just that 5 minute spot alone, he was nervous. Letterman said he would have his back kind of turned to the audience. It was kind of a tough performance for him, but just that spot saying he was on Letterman alone, now he's seeing more and more crowds come out to him.
I'm kind of bummed because I'm missing right now, even as we speak, my favorite cultural train wreck, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. I'm like a rubbernecker, man. Every night it's the crash of fucking metal when that show starts. Me and my friends have a little office pool wondering exactly which episode and which guest is going to be on the night Jay finally puts a 9mm in his mouth and blows his Dorito shilling head off his fucking body. I think it's going to be Joey Lawrence from the show Blossom. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. Tonight we have Joey Lawrence. Hi, Joey. How are you? It's good to see you again. Boy, it was always my comedic dream to be 44 years old and interviewing a little Tony Danza wannabe every 3 months. Boy, I'm fulfilled as a human spiritually. So anyway, Joey, you're 16 now? You're 16 years old? Yeah. Good God, what have I done with my life? His brain splew out, forming an NBC peacock on the wall behind him. Because he's a company man to the bitter fucking end. And it all started when he did the Doritos commercial. Here's the deal, folks. You do a commercial, you're off the artistic roll call forever. End of story. Okay? You're another corporate fucking shill. You're another whore at the capitalist gangbang. And if you do a commercial, there's a price on your head. Everything you say is suspect, and every word that comes out of your mouth is now like a turd falling into my drink.
At 22, he was on national TV, did a watered-down version of his act. Do you think this bothered him at all?
Yes. I think it totally bothered him. When you're a guy like Bill Hicks and you have... It sounds, just by what you're telling me, it sounds like this guy had abnormal amounts of hubris. So he was a very, I don't want to say arrogant, but he was smarter than everyone. And again, when you're that young, you always think you're smarter than everyone. And because you think you're smarter than everyone, you get yourself in trouble. He has nobody checking him at this point.
No, and he is learning on the job. And he can't, and from his peers, everybody's like, you're amazing. For Jay Leno to come out and say, I got to get you on Letterman, he didn't say that to any other comic in Houston, okay?
But it's not good enough unless he could do it his way. And when
and he couldn't.
And he couldn't.
Let me tell you what happened. When I was a kid, starting out, I would watch TV and I'd go, boy, if they like that guy, I was looking at comics, if they like that guy, they're going to love me. And that was the impetus that led me to work on comedy and start and continue. And then you get out to Los Angeles and you come to the cold realization that from that kid's wish, boy, if they love this guy, they're going to love me. They don't want me. They don't want you if you have an idea that doesn't correspond to their propaganda. And it's everyone in LA is disillusioned by that. But I no longer am. Because I got it in focus and I know what to do with it now. So
at this point, he is a nonstop touring comic. The following year, between 84 and 85, he does about 280 shows in that year. So he's nonstop on the road. However, He's drinking nonstop. He's doing methamphetamines and cocaine now to stay awake to make the drives. He's living isolated by himself, and he is full-blown into drugs and alcohol.
I was over in Australia during Easter, which was interesting. Interesting to note, they celebrate Easter the same way we do, commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus by telling our children a giant bunny rabbit left chocolate eggs in the night. Now, I wonder why we're fucked up as a race. Anybody got any clues out there? Or where do you get this shit from, you know? Why those two things, you know? Why not goldfish left Lincoln logs in your sock drawer, you know? And as long as we're making shit up, go hog wild, you know? At least a goldfish with a Lincoln log on its back going across your floor to your sock drawer has a miraculous connotation to it. Mummy, I woke up today and there was a Lincoln log in my sock drawer. That's the story of Jesus. Who comes up with this shit? I've read the Bible. I can't find the word bunny or chocolate anywhere in that fucking book.
His reputation became, how drunk can you get Bill? And people knew that. The audience would continually just run up and give him drinks, any kind of drink. He wouldn't know what it was, and he was just drinking on stage. There would be times he would be laying on the back, looking at the ceiling, talking into a microphone. Well, this didn't get Bill a good reputation for bookers. You know, a lot of people were like, look, he just gets drunk. And then eventually he would start then getting drunk and fighting with the audience because they kept bringing him drugs and alcohol and things like that. So Bill was really getting a hard lesson on being on the road. And by doing this, he's damaging the entire reputation that he made in Houston and on doing the Letterman show and all that stuff, because he just completely would be blitzed. So keep in mind, he's 23, 24 years old at this time. That drinking that he started to do in Houston is what found him his voice. He felt that truth would work across America.
It's hard to have a relationship in this business, man. You're always traveling, keeping weird hours, you know. It's going to take a very special woman, you know, or a bunch of average ones. Which, I mean, I'm saying that either way. I read an article in the paper. Ted Bundy's on trial in Florida. On trial, 24 women, the guy killed, I don't know. 24 women. He's on trial. The paper says the courtroom is filled with women trying to meet him and give him love letters and wedding fucking proposals. Does anyone remember reading this fucking article? Yeah. I'm sorry to say, the first thing I thought when I read that was, and I'm not getting laid. What am I doing wrong? You know, a natural question. So I read another article in the paper. Woman is suing the state of Wisconsin. Why would anyone sue the state of Wisconsin? Well, here's one. She married a fella on death row. Why is he on death row? He killed 8 women. She married him. There's more. He has AIDS. Let's up the ante of the story. You wanna? Who wants to still play with my story now? Because I'm up in the ante. He is on death row for killing 8 women. He has AIDS. She married him and is suing the state for the rights of conjugal visits. Oh. Now, I'm sorry to say, the first thing that crossed my mind when I read that was, man, I'm not getting laid. Hey.
As a comic, can you do the same act in Houston and that same act in Montana?
Yes, mm-hmm. You can. I definitely think that there are topics you might not want to cover. Like, I wouldn't recommend you doing. Well, again, though, it's his audience. So if these are people that are going to see him, you could do the same act that you want. But if you're brand new to a scene and no one knows who you are, then you probably shouldn't do your atheist bit in Mississippi.
Yeah. And that's, at this point, he was a name, but he wasn't known. This is the first exposure for people.
Well, right now he's underground.
Yes.
Right now he's barely underneath where he'll probably end up becoming. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's getting ready to break through, but he just isn't there yet. And at that point, you know, comics end up becoming, that's where they hit their low point. A lot of the comics, right when they're getting ready to break through and achieve that success that they've been pining for, that's usually when they sabotage their career because they feel like they have to do something different, or they start relying on the things that got them there in the first place. Things like anger, which definitely perks up your, it puts passion into your words. You know, now all of a sudden his words have meaning. And then the alcohol, which again gave him the liquid courage to go up there and say these things that everybody thought but never had the courage to say. Well, he's now doing that. But again, when you abuse it too much, you end up becoming a joke.
And I got to see while I was over there footage of the Rodney King trial, which I had never seen while I was here. I saw footage over there of the Rodney King trial. I think I figured out why the L.A. riots occurred. Did you guys see these cops testifying, man? Do these guys have balls or what, man? These guys carry their balls in a wheelbarrow, man. Excuse me. Man, my big balls is here to testify. Place your right testicle on the Bible. This guy, Officer Coon. Is life too fucking weird or what? Officer Coon looks in the camera and actually says, "Oh, that Rodney King beating tape? It's all in how you look at it."
That's right.
It's how you look at the tape. Well, would you care to tell the court? You're looking at that. Yeah, okay, sure. It's how you look at it. The tape. For instance, well, if you play it backwards, you see us help King up and send him on his way.
Bill didn't know the line yet. He would cross it continuously. So he would have an audience.
Well, and he's 23, 24 years old. What does he have to show for any of his work? You know, what does he have to show? It's not like he's got a family that he has to get better for. It's not like he's got all these things that he has to look at his life and go, you know what? I have to get better for this. He doesn't have that. All he's got is comedy.
Exactly. He never had
nothing's keeping him grounded.
A girlfriend. I mean, he had girlfriends, but not like somebody to ground him. He was do or die. Mm-hmm. This was his life.
The point I'm making is about the idea of freedom of expression. And I believe that that there's this agenda in mainstream media, and I think it's fairly easy to back this up, to keep people stupid, docile, and apathetic, and therefore the elite who own these corporations and the families that own the corporations, even fewer people, their agenda is to keep us stupid and apathetic.
These performances, the words would spread around, hey, Bill Hooks, he gets too drunk. Audience members just think he's this drunk comic, yada, yada, yada. So eventually, by January of 1986, after he toured a whole year, 280 dates and across just America, he was flat broke because he was spending all his money on drugs, all his money on the alcohol because his bar tabs were obscene. And his reputation was now a guy that gets drunk on stage and sometimes doesn't perform, sometimes does.
All right, man. Good evening, everyone. Oh, Jesus Christ. I've had more people in bed before than this. Fuck, man. In fact, they were at the hotel and I left them to come here and do this. Don't I feel like a fucking idiot? Please don't debate me. It's my one true talent, okay? I have 23 hours a day to develop these little webs of fucking conspiracy. So please, relax and enjoy your hair. And your little cracker spawn are back at the hotel, choking down the minibar contents, probably fucking each other and producing more little crackers to come fuck with my life, you inbred, redneck, hillbilly fucking tourist you. Good evening. How are you tonight? Welcome. Welcome. Welcome to No Sympathy Night. Welcome to You're Wrong Night. Boy, I'm in a mood. You know, it could be this haircut. Every time I look at my hair, I go, fuck it, someone needs to die. Generally, I think it's me, but I don't have the balls to do it. So I continue to walk around with my hair. Okay, shut up. Shut the fuck up. Fucking morons. You fucking morons.
What did disservice did Bill do to his career and talents and reputation? in that, you know, year and a half, 2 years?
Well, obviously, he was on the David Letterman show, and that put him up on the top of the mountain. I'm sure there were comics nationwide that were like, what the hell? I've been trying to get there forever. This guy knows Jay Leno, and that's how he gets on. That's it. That's all he has to do. So to a lot of people, it seemed like he was on the easy street. And I'm sure that ate him up inside, too. When people devalue all the hard work that you put into your craft, and a lot of the times this happens with young people, like, older people will devalue all the work that you've put into it because they're not watching you do it. They don't know how much heart and soul you've put into this craft. So now here he is putting all this work into it. He achieves a level of success, but now again, everything's been so easy for him, he has to sabotage it. He has to make it more difficult. That's why it's like he knows that the alcohol probably doesn't make him sharp. It just makes him brave. It gives him that little edge. But again, you ride that edge, you get cut.
And God wept, I believe, is the next word. As did the world, as more knobby-kneed white guys walk the planet with their black nylon fucking socks, their fat fucking tick-like wives, and their little fat fucking hateful children. Walk in the doorway, it's a doorway movement! You and I check politics on your fucking porch while your wife wiggles a fucking dong and fucks her own pussy with it. You fucking redneck hillbilly piece of shit, you. Fuck America. If that's America, then fuck you, too. Good evening, everyone. How are y'all? Good? Everyone good? Welcome to my show of hate. I have this weirdest style, don't I? Phil, you do a little joke that's kind of funny, then you start telling us you hate us, and you dig a fucking hole. Where's Bill going? He's going to comedy death.
Was Bill Hicks always the smartest guy in the room in his mind?
Yes. Absolutely. He was the smartest guy in the room, and that's why when he would get drunk, that's why he had no problem arguing with an audience member. Because if somebody says no, especially if he's going off about atheism and somebody challenges him on that, could you imagine?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's like, because to him, it's so black and white. It's easy. Why can't you grasp onto this theory? And that's what Bill Hicks was. Like, Bill Hicks would be like, this is so simple. If you can't figure it out, you're an idiot. And he's saying that to audience members' faces. It's one thing to say it on an album when you got an audience that has your back and they're clapping it up for every joke that you have. But we're talking about audiences that a lot of them probably didn't even know who he was. And then he goes up there and he says these blasphemous things. Audience members take offense to it. Now, all of a sudden, he's killing the show just to make sure that this person looks stupid and he feels superior.
But I've always found religion to be fascinating. Ideas such as how people act on their beliefs. Pro-lifers murdering doctors. Pro-lifers murdering people. It's irony on the base level, but I like it. You know what I mean? It's real basic irony, but still, you can get a hoot. It's a hoot. It's a fucking hoot. You're pro-life, it will kill your ass. That's what fundamentalism breeds, though. No irony, you see. They take the word literally.
In America, can a comic present, I'm the smartest guy in the room, and be combative with an audience?
It happens all the time. Anytime you make that announcement, I'm not saying he made the announcement, but anytime you carry yourself like I am the smartest man in the world or smartest man in the room, you know, you're definitely going to bump into somebody that's going to want to challenge you.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is because he feels like he's the smartest man in the room, when somebody challenges him, he looks down at them going, who's this scumbag? Who's this idiot?
And he would sacrifice the show because he was drunk.
He would sacrifice the show because somebody lesser than him is challenging him. And he wanted to beat them into the ground in front of everyone.
Mentally. And mentally. He knew he could.
Yes.
He knew he could.
It's great to be here. I thank you. I've been on the road doing comedy for 10 years now, so bear with me while I plaster on a fake smile and plow through this shit one more time.
By 1986, after this horrible tour, he's back in Houston. He's not getting booked anywhere. People are like, look, he's a wild card. We can't take a risk in this all across the comedic world. But as a comics comic, comedians will always do him a favor. So by 1987, Bill was still a very big draw in Houston, but not getting booked across the states. Rodney Dangerfield took a chance on him and said, look, man, you know, I seen a tape of yours. I know how great you can be. You have to hold yourself together. And he put him on something known as the Young Comedian Special. Again, Bill shined and he kind of stayed away from everybody else, and he was a figure. Because even in 10 minutes on a special, Bill Hicks somehow impressed everybody.
Well, because at that time, again, the things he was saying, I mean, at that time, things like atheism and all these topics that in today's world are just like, yeah, whatever, atheism, who cares? Well, dude, back in those days?
Reagan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about Ronald Reagan, where it was just like, God bless America, you know, yeah. Constantly religion, religion, religion. It was like people don't realize in today's day and age what it was like in the 80s during Christmas time. There was no, there was celebration for Hanukkah. You might have seen a menorah every now and then, but dude, for the most part, it was Christmas, Christmas, Christmas. Well, now a lot of that has changed. I personally think it's because Bill Hicks might have been at the center of that, yeah. Pointing out that, look, we understand that the majority of America is Christians, but you don't own America. And Bill Hicks was the first one that I remember being the one that kind of went after that.
These musicians today who don't do drugs and in fact speak out against them, we're rock against drugs. Boy, they suck. Ballless, soulless, spiritless, little corporate fucking puppets, suckers of Satan's cock, each and every one of them.
Because he's a comics comic and everybody knows how talented he is and how much he's changing the genre of comedy, which is he's doing right now, like you said, with the topics he's talking about, abortion, Christianity, drug use, all those experiences, and all he has is positive stories. Do you think that as a comic, true to his beliefs, to the core, could never reach a mass audience in this time frame?
The thing is, though, is he did reach the mass audience with Letterman, and he did it with the Rodney Dangerfield Young Comedian special. So he could get on those specials and put it out there for a mass appeal. But at this point in his career, at this point in America's timeline, I don't think right now, I don't think then would be the time for him to pop, but we're just at the beginning of it. We're just at the beginning of who Bill Hicks is.
See, I just don't agree with everything I hear just because I hear it over the TV. Sometimes I got to ask myself what I feel about things. That way I can get a closer reading of what's true.
So with the Young Comedian special and him performing on Letterman a few more times, bookers changed their mind like, all right, Bill's cleaned up. Let's get him on here. So in 1987, he does another 300 shows across America, still not getting a large audience, still 25 people maybe in a room, things like that. So his reputation, though, now is being billed as the rock and roll comic. So what audience members he's bringing, they are, once again, every time offering him drugs, saying, hey, let's get high, let's get drunk, let's do this. So Bill, once again, falls into that realm of rock and roll comic, chain smoking, and the people in the audience that he's getting are people that are really just out to party with them.
I have news for you non-smokers, and I'm glad to tell you this news because I know for a fact you do not know this, and I feel it's my duty to pass on information at all times to all my brothers and sisters so that we can evolve and I can get out of here. Non-smokers, ready? Drum roll. Non-smokers die every day. Oh, God. Sleep tight. Jog, eat tofu, you're dead. Party, drink, you're dead. What's the difference?
So at the end of 87, after he tours, no money again. Back in Houston, lost the majority of his money to drugs, to alcohol. Nothing has changed. And he is in a state where it's like he can't control himself. But everybody on the comic world is like, Bill, you need to get your stuff together. Deciding that he needs to go for this. You know, Bill's 27 at the time. He decides that he cannot get sober in Houston, Texas. He cannot grow as a person there because of all his friends there are all now part of that outlaw scene and drinking and drinking. So he moves to New York penniless and says, you know what, I'm going to start my comedy career in New York City. And at this point, this is where he becomes absolutely sober. No drugs, no drinking, chain smoking like a son of a bitch. He's smoking twice as much as he used to. So he's still highly addictive to nicotine, but everything else is clean. And now Bill is having his most productive era, and he is turning everybody's heads in New York City as a comics. By 1988, he finally puts out his first video, Sane Man, and this is where the legend of Bill Hicks officially starts for the comic world.
I recommend a healthy dose of psilocybin mushrooms. 3 weeks ago, two of my friends and I went to a ranch in Fredericksburg, Texas, and took what Terrence McKenna calls a heroic dose. 5 dried grams. Let me tell you, our third eye was squeegeed quite cleanly. Wow. And I'm glad they're against the law. Because you know what happened when I took them? I laid in a field of green grass for 4 hours going, my God, I love everything. The heavens parted, God looked down and rained gifts of forgiveness onto my being, healing me on every level, psychically, physically, emotionally. And I realized our true nature is spirit, not body, that we are eternal beings, and God's love is unconditional, and there's nothing we can ever do to change that. It is only our illusion that we are separate from God or that we are alone. In fact, the reality is we are one with God, and He loves us.
Follow Brandon Gooch Hahn at Twitter and Instagram at Your Buddy Gooch, and Jocelyn Sharp on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Jocelyn Sharp. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Rise to Offend, and on Instagram, Rise to Offend Official. Also, make sure you listen and subscribe to us every Monday on the Metal Sucks podcast on metalsucks.net. Support and discover the comedy of Bill Hicks. Go to billhicks.com and make sure you pick up any CDs, see any videos you can on YouTube. Check out the documentary American, The Bill Hicks Story, and discover his world and his comedy today. I want to thank everybody so much once again for the 5-star reviews on iTunes and for subscribing to the show and showing us all the support. That simple review, that's all it takes to motivate us to do this weekly, guys, and bring you as much of RTO as we possibly can. Next week, we finish the story of Bill Hicks, one of the most prolific comics and honest viewpoints that have ever graced American culture. Until next week, repeat offenders, RTO podcast, signing off.